start to turn it around.
What is America to me? A name, a map, the flag I see. A certain word, democracy. What is America to me? The house I live in, a plot of earth, a street, the grocer and the butcher, and the people that I meet, the children in the playground, the faces that I see, all races, all religions, that's America to me. I work in, the workers at my side, the little town or city where my people lived and died, the howdy and the handshake, the air of feeling free, the right to speak my mind out, that's America to me. The words of old Abe Lincoln, of Jefferson and Paine, of Washington and Douglas, and the task that still remains, the little bridge at Concord, where freedom's fight began, our Gettysburg and Midway, and the story of the town. The town I live in, the street, the house, the room, the pavement of the city, or a garden all in bloom. The church, the school, the clubhouse, the million lights I see, but especially the people, that's America to me. But especially the people, that's America to me.
And welcome to Heal DC. This is Joni, and perhaps Chuck is going to join us this morning. For those of you who don't know, you were just listening to Paul Robeson, who was, of course, attacked quite ferociously during the McCarthy period. One of the reasons I played that song this morning is we're going to, in a moment, listen to a clip from Dr. Greg Carr. Many of you know Dr. Carr, who is on these airwaves, part of the WPFW family, also a professor at Howard University, teaching Africana studies and law. He was voted, I think, three times nationally the best professor among HBCUs. And he spoke on his weekly show. He has a program called In Class with Carr that anyone can access if you can get onto YouTube. It comes on live Saturday mornings, but just go to In Class with Carr. And after the election, he spoke extensively about Paul Robeson and Langston Hughes and contrasted what they had to say about America and this country with our orange man president, Trump, who talks about Make America Great Again. And Greg Carr, which we're going to hear in a moment, gives a very good analysis of what Paul Robeson and Langston Hughes had to say about America. So we're going to go into that right now.
And Langston Hughes, a proud person of African descent, was speaking from a black voice, but he wasn't speaking only of and about or to black people. And when I think about that, I think about Paul Robeson, of course, his famous Ballot for Americans. And, you know, Robeson, his Ballot for Americans, he begins that Ballot for Americans with a question. And when Robeson brings that together with the lyrics, and he asks, you know, that's not Ballot for Americans. Ballot for America, that this is the house I live in. The house I live in. Robeson, who was accused of being anti-American by these fascists, the Joe McCartneys, and of course, Joe McCartney was a great mentor of Roy Cohn, who is one of the people who conjured Donald Trump. This fascism has deep roots. And when I think about Paul Robeson and the lyrics to The House I Live In, which was ironically actually recorded by Frank Sinatra as well. But of course, I like Paul Robeson's version. When he talks about the house I live in, he asks a question at the beginning. And then I'm going to read nicely. Paul Robeson says, "What is America to me? A name, a map, the flag I see, a certain word, democracy." It's too high. Change the pitch. "What is America to me?" It's closer to Robeson. "A name, a map, the flag I see, a certain word, democracy. What is America to me? The house I live in, the friends that I have found, the folks beyond the railroad and the people all around, the worker and the farmer, the sailor on the sea, the men who built this country, that's America to me." And he goes on. But he's not singing that as a patriotic America. As a patriotic American, as much as he's singing that as a person who is saying, it ain't no flag, it ain't no anthem, it ain't Lee effing Greenwood. "I'm proud to be a Canadian, where at least I know I'm free." Wait, "I'm proud to be an American." As John Oliver revealed, talking about Lee Greenwood, he did the same damn song that these people be swaying to at the Trump rallies for Canada. But at any rate, that ain't what Robeson's talking about. He's talking about the people. He says, especially the people. But that's America. That's Nigeria. That's Ghana. That's England. That's France. It's the people. If you have to place your common humanity before everyone else. Langston Hughes writes, "Let America be America again." Remember, this is the white voice, and then you're going to hear the black voice come in. So I'll do them in a little bit different voices. This is not a drama class, so I'm going to hasten with this. He says, "Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain seeking a home where he himself is free. America never was America to me. Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be that great strong land of love where never kings connive nor tyrants scheme that any man be crushed by one above. It never was America to me. Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wealth, but opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe. There's never been equality for me, nor freedom in this homeland of the free. Say, who are you that mumbles in the dark? And who are you that draws your veil across the stars? I am the poor white, fooled and pushed apart. I am the Negro bearing slavery's scars. I am the red man driven from the land. I am the immigrant clutching the hope I seek and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog eat dog, of mighty crush the weak. I am the young man full of strength and hope, tangled in that ancient endless chain of profit, power, gain, of grab the land, of grab the gold, of grab the ways of satisfying need, of work the men, of take the pay, of owning everything for one's own greed. I am the farmer, bondsman to the soil. I am the worker, sold to the machine. I am the Negro, servant to you all. I am the people, humble, hungry, mean, hungry yet today despite the dream, beaten yet today. Oh, pioneers, I am the man who never got ahead. The poorest worker bartered through the years. Yet, I'm the one who dreamt our basic dream in the old world while still a serf of kings, who dreamt a dream so strong, so brave, so true, that even yet its mighty daring sings in every brick and stone, in every furrow turned, that's made America the land it has become. Oh, I'm the man who sailed those early seas in search of what I meant to be my home. For I'm the one who left dark Ireland's shore, and Poland's plain, and England's grassy lea, and torn from black Africa. From black Africa's strand, I came to build a homeland of the free. The free? Who said the free? Not me. Surely not me. The millions on relief today, the millions shot down when we strike, the millions who have nothing for our pay, for all the dreams we've dreamed, for all the songs we've sung, for all the hopes we've had, and all the flags we've hung. The millions who have nothing for our pay, except the dream that's almost dead today. Oh, let America be America again, that land that never has been yet and yet must be, that land where every man is free, that land that's mine, the poor man's, Indians, Negroes, me, who made America, whose sweat and blood, whose faith and pain, whose hand at the foundry, whose plow in the rain, must bring back our mighty dream again. Sure, call me any ugly name you choose, the steel of freedom does not stain, for those who live like leeches on the people's lives, we must take back our land again, America. Oh yes, I say it plain. America never was America to me. And yet I swear this oath, America will be. Out of the rack and ruin of our gangster death, the rape and rot of graft and stealth and lies, we the people must redeem the land, the mines, the plants, the rivers, the mountains, and the endless plain, and all the stretch of these great green states, and make America again. That's Langston Hughes. Before Donald John Trump slithered out of his mother's womb and visited his stain on human history, misshapen by his upbringing and circumstances. A failure, and as a failure, an entirely appropriate avatar for the failure that is the United States of America. This is before Donald John Trump grew to manhood and began to slouch toward Washington. Langston Hughes called it. He did not say make America great again. He said make America again, meaning what? The avatar, the concept of America, is a criminal enterprise. We're gonna talk about that in a minute too. But the vision of a society where all of us can live our lives in peace.
And you just listened to Dr. Greg Carr. In a moment, I'm gonna tell you how you might be able to go hear Greg Carr in person Wednesday night. But I just wanted to again say this is To Heal DC, and we're calling this show kind of reflections on the election. We have three segments. In a moment, you're going to be hearing from Dr. Edwin Chapman talking about Trump's proposed nomination of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to lead the HSS. And the last segment, we're going to be doing a positive note about Harriet Tubman, who was honored by Governor Westmore in Maryland on Monday, Veterans Day. We'll be speaking as well to Harriet Tubman's great, great, great grandniece, Tina Wyatt. Let me just announce that Greg Carr is going to be speaking this Wednesday at Howard University. You can go hear him live. It's from 5 to 6:30. You can jump on the Howard University's website and find the 45th annual Charles H. Thompson Lecture. Dr. Carr will be giving that at the School of Education, the Minor Building, again this Wednesday, 5 to 6:30, and it's, I'm sure, going to be a very riveting speech. So if you can make it, please do. And I wanted to just mention, and Dr. Carr encouraged me to do so, I grew up listening to those songs by Paul Robeson and that poem by Langston Hughes. And so many decades later, I understand why my mother constantly was playing those songs and talking about that poem And it's important to think about both of those pieces as we walk into a world where Donald Trump is talking about make America great again, when it was never great for many people. With that said, I'm happy to introduce Dr. Chapman, and let me say good morning to Chuck Hicks, and perhaps Chuck will have... Good morning, Chuck.
Morning.
I don't know if you have a comment about what we just heard, and you can certainly comment on what Dr. Chapman's going to be speaking about as well.
I thought what Greg just said was just so refreshing and such a great reminder that America has never been America for so many of us.
Absolutely. And Paul Robeson sang about it. Langston Hughes wrote about it. So we have some lessons from the ancestors as well as our own personal ancestors, yours, Chuck, and mine as well. So, okay, let's welcome. We're going to be, Chuck and I are giving a big round of applause for Dr. Edwin Chapman, who is a physician, a graduate of Howard University School of Medicine, practiced in the community for over 40 years. He's a professor of medicine, an opioid researcher, behavioral health advocate, and to many of us who are in the trenches in the health field and in the community, Dr. Chapman is a hero to us. So I asked Dr. Chapman to come on and, among other things, share some of his thoughts about Trump's proposed person to head up HHS. Welcome, Dr. Chapman. Good morning.
Good morning, Joni. Glad to be here and glad to be on this program. And that those poems and essays were just so appropriate for the circumstances that we're in today. You know, we're talking about these strange appointments that the president-elect has indicated and where we're headed. But I think those poems and essays really explain that we're in a situation where people, human beings, are not valued. And these are people who value money over human beings. And I say that because under the Trump administration, we had two epidemics. We talk a lot about the COVID epidemic, but we also had underneath that the opioid epidemic. And there are parallels in both. So when we talk about the appointment or potential appointment of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as the Secretary of Health, we get a sidetrack on some of the craziness that he's advocated, saying that that vaccines cause autism, that he promotes drinking raw milk, non-pasteurized milk. He says that AIDS, that HIV did not cause AIDS, among many other things. But I think what we really need to do is look underneath of the people surrounding Trump and his behavior initially during the COVID epidemic and then the opioid epidemic. And remember, his real focus was not necessarily on saving lives, but he wanted to get the economy or make sure that the economy remained strong going into the election. And that was his big concern, was that closing businesses, closing schools was going to impact the economy and impact his chances of getting reelected. And then when we look at the parallel situation with the opioid epidemic, which again began before COVID, but right in the middle of our beginning of his his administration, where they were more focused on ending Obamacare. And his first Secretary of Health, Seema Verna, proposed that in order to get Medicaid, you had to work. So they wanted to get rid of, they wanted to put a lot of people off of Medicaid. His Secretary of HHS, the first one, Dr. Price, said that medication treatment for opioid epidemic was just replacing one drug with another. And then, of course, Mike Pence said needle exchange encouraged drug use, not understanding that we were talking about reducing AIDS and hepatitis C. And then Jeff Sessions, who was the Attorney General, wanted to lock people up for drug use. So the circumstances, we have to understand the economics and who's driving it and who's making money and where the money is going, and really, in order to really understand their approach to this whole, these whole issues. And just today, I see that a Stanford physician who was a proponent of shutting down or not shutting down schools and reopening businesses, that got a lot of play in the latter part of 2020 in a document called the Great Barrington Declaration, is now being proposed as a potential head of NIH. And so these are economic decisions that are being made, I think, that promote money and profits over lives. And this is not new. If we look back at why we don't have universal health insurance in this country, we have to look at the post-Civil War era. And after the slaves were emancipated, there were statements made that Negroes or African Americans, slaves, did not need white man's medicine. That why give them treatment when if they can't work? If you can't work, you have no value. And that idea has continued all the way up until the present. And many people feel, if you read the document 1619, it's well pointed out in that document that that's the underlying reason why we don't have universal health insurance in this country today. And without everybody having health insurance, we're not going to be able to solve the opioid problem or any of our chronic medical problems. But again, it's the fact that certain people, and when I say certain people, I'm talking about older people, people in nursing homes, people on Medicaid, people on Medicare, people on Social Security. There's that feeling that they need to be sacrificed for the economy. And that's the approach that I think this administration is taking, very different from the Biden administration, where you had scientists and researchers focusing on saving lives. This administration is clearly focused on profits and money. And look at the people that are surrounding Trump, these billionaires who are now talking about restructuring the government and removing a lot of agency heads and experts and turning it over to so-called courts or judges or someone else to make these decisions.
Absolutely. We couldn't agree with you more. Again, we're talking to Dr. Edwin Chapman, one of the heroes in this community for healthcare. practiced medicine for over 40 years right here in D.C. And I'm going to give a shout out as well. Many of us know that in this country, as Dr. Chapman just mentioned, we've been fighting for universal health care for over 125 years. I'd like to give a shout out to Dr. Paul Cornelli, who is an ancestor right here in Washington, D.C. He was the first Black president of the American Public Health Association and much, much more. I think Dr. Chapman's dad met up with Dr. Cornelli years ago, and I was fortunate enough to have worked with him many years ago. And he was struggling with a large numbers of people for universal health care. And we're every year we see, and certainly with Trump, we're going to have to fight just to have the basics, Medicare and Medicaid. All of that's going to be threatened. And Dr. Chapman, we talked about, you and I talked about yesterday, the whole concept of public health is much more than Medicare and Medicaid. It includes things like access to housing, access to decent food, not spending all of our monies, billions of dollars on war and genocide, which causes, to say the least, great stress. So talk a little bit more about that, Dr. Chapman, about how it's not just who's appointed to HHS, but the threat to all of our lives and health with this new president.
So Joni, we often talk about personal responsibility or patient-centered care. But when we concentrate on personal responsibility, we're basically saying that the individual is the cause of all of their outcomes, so to speak. It's what you did or what you didn't do. So when we take that approach, we can say that perhaps a person that's homeless is a moral failing. Somebody that's on drugs is a moral failing. And so we can easily marginalize that person, not understanding that that person is really created by the community that they live in, by the economics that they live in, by the laws and regulations that they live under. And so those circumstances can happen to any one of us. And really, in our fragmented, fragile economy, can almost happen overnight. Person can lose a job. If they lose their job, they lose their health insurance. And if they lose their job, they could lose their home and end up on the street. So our approach and what I was taught at Howard University, and I'm glad you mentioned Dr. Paul Cornelli. I'd also like to mention Dr. Jesse Barber, who actually was one of the founders of healthcare for the homeless in the District of Columbia that became Unity Healthcare. Those were my mentors. I was trained in a system where we were responsible for each other. And when we really look at that system, we're really talking about an Afrocentric system where the village, we talk about the village is responsible for upholding itself, which means that your neighbor is your family. And that's very different from the system that we're propagating under this for-profit healthcare system in the United States. And by the way, the Commonwealth Fund just published a report 2 months ago that showed out of 10 countries, the United States is 10th. We're last in terms of outcomes, but first in terms of cost. And it's because we're operating under a for-profit system where these insurance companies are more interested in making money than saving lives. And we really have to address that. We understand it. I don't think the larger country, based on the outcomes of this last election, really understand the circumstances that they're in. It's called what I call cognitive dissonance. People are voting against their own best interests.
Absolutely. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM. This is To Heal DC with me, Joni, and with Chuck. And Chuck, if you had a question or comment before we move on, and in about 5 minutes, we're going to be doing a segment on Harriet Tubman and the fact that she was honored by Governor Moore on Veterans Day. But what Dr. Chapman is saying is, of course, very important to our lives. And one of the main questions for all of us is, how are we going to organize to make sure that we maintain some semblance of our rights to health care? Chuck, did you have any comment?
Yeah, I just think that what we were just talking about is so monumental in terms of how the system so much depends on health. But if you don't have health, nothing else matters. And if you can't get health care, you're in a bind. And I think the points that he was making are just absolutely right on time, right on point here, that we need to remember how important health is in terms of for all of us and whatever we want to do in this society. We need our health. We need access to good health.
And we need, that's absolutely right, we need a health care system that supports the people.
And give it to us.
Yes. And Dr. Chapman mentioned Dr. Jesse Barber. He is the reason why this show started. Many moons ago, over three decades ago, Jesse Barber, and myself and Michelle Tinglin Clemens and others worked closely with Jesse Barber, and he encouraged us to start this radio show. Dr. Chapman, your final comments before we move on to Harriet Tubman, and any suggestions about what we need to do to organize and demand that we have basic rights to help.
So, Joni, as you know, we've been working across the board with businessmen like the owners of Busboys and Poets, Ben's Chili Bowl, as well as community activists, academicians from Howard University and others in really changing this healthcare system. The District of Columbia is the perfect environment to actually create a pilot demonstration of how a community can come together and heal itself. That's really what we're talking about. We have senior citizens who go into the hospital. They may have a heart attack or stroke and need support when they come out. We can assign so-called peer support specialists to work with them when they come out. But we have to know our community, we have to know our neighbors, we have to know their needs, and we have to be supportive and not leave individuals to themselves. We have to begin to function as a village, and that can be done. We know it can be done.
Absolutely. And ironically, that is just what we started to talk about in the mid-1980s with Jesse Barber, that Washington, D.C. should be a model for health care. And it still remains true today. We have a long way to go, but we need to hang in there and continue to struggle, continue to fight for our rights to health care. Thank you very much, Dr. Chapman, and I hope you stay tuned as we move in now to a segment on Harriet Tubman, who this last Monday, Maryland Governor Wes Moore promoted her to be a Brigadier General. And we're going to hear from Wes Moore, we're going to hear from several others, and at the end of the segment, we're going to hear from Tina Wyatt, who has been a frequent guest on this show, Harriet Tubman's great-great-great-grandniece. But we thought it was important to put in a little bit of positive story here as we face many challenges with this new president. So let's begin with a segment on Harriet Tubman. We're going to start with Governor Wes Moore as he is in the middle of his statement honoring Harriet.
Many people will look at something's imperfection and just say it can't be fixed. But then there are those special people, like General Tubman, who said, if it is to be fixed and it needs to be fixed, then let me be the one to go help and fix it. Let me be the one who's going to be courageous and thoughtful. And let me do it with unity as the North Star. And it's important because when you think about even just the history of this state, her birth state, because let's be clear, she understood the unevenness of Maryland's history. And it's an evenness that we all hold on to, because it is important to remind people sometimes that Maryland is the northernmost southern state in this country. It's important sometimes to remind people that the Mason-Dixon line runs through the state of Maryland for a reason. It's important to remind people sometimes that the bloodiest battles of the Civil War took place right here in the state of Maryland. It's important to remind people that sometimes that during the Civil War, Maryland refused to secede and allowed for slavery inside of our borders. It's important to remind people sometime that even when you look at the Maryland flag that I proudly wear on my lapel, the Maryland flag is a combination of a Union flag and a Confederate flag. That's the history. Harriet Tubman knew that. She understood the complexity. She understood and she felt the freedom that she felt when she went north. And she knew if there are still people in bondage, then that means I have work to do. Despite the unevenness of our past, Maryland bears the standard for what national unity could and should look like in the United States of America. We work together here. We understand each other here. We are willing to put petty differences to the side because we know there's a greater good that we're hoping to attain. That here in Maryland, we see our neighbors not as enemies, but as friends. This is what Maryland does. Our sense of common cause was not preordained, though. It was earned by many courageous acts that have taken place over generations. And as long as that moral arc is moving, we've always been blessed to have people who are willing to make sure that it bent in the right direction. And that includes people like General Tubman. Because General Tubman continues to mark our path towards greater connectivity and community and compassion and love. She continues to be our North Star towards justice. She continues to do as was said in Psalm 61, to help us to find a rock that is higher than I. And today, we honor that legacy with an honor that puts on paper what we've always known in our hearts, that our leader in acts deserved a star on her shoulder the whole time. So today we celebrate the American Moses. Today we celebrate our modern prophet. Today we celebrate a soldier and a person who earned the title of veteran. Today we celebrate one of the greatest authors of the American story, Maryland's own General Harriet Tubman.
It is now my pleasure to welcome the 107th Speaker of the Maryland House of Delegates, Adrian Jones, to the podium to present the resolution from the Maryland General Assembly.
I'm pleased to join all of you today as we honor Harriet Tubman, a true Maryland heroine and veteran. In 1868, Frederick Douglass wrote a remarkable letter to Harriet Tubman, where he said, "The difference between us is very marked. Most that I have done and suffered in the service of our cause has been in public, and I have received much encouragement at every step of the way. You, on the other hand, have labored in a private way. I have wrought in the day, you in the night. Frederick Douglass' words are an important reminder that the contributions of Black women are often overlooked, disregarded, or forgotten. In this day, Black women continue to silently take the torch from those who have come before us. Like Harriet Tubman, we do it for our families. We do it for our faith. We do it for our communities. Often we do it at the risk of our own freedoms, at the expense of our own rights and liberties. But today we celebrate the contributions of a strong Maryland Black woman. Today we commemorate Harriet Tubman. We just did, or you saw what was happening here. Harriet Tubman, for the courageous work she did during the darkest time in our country's history. Because her story must continue to be told. It must continue to inspire us to stand up for our freedoms, and more importantly, for each other.
At this time, I welcome Dr. Anthony Campbell to the podium to read the Governor's Proclamation.
Good morning. The State of Maryland proclamation from the Governor of the State of Maryland, Harriet Tubman Appreciation Month, November 2024. Whereas Arundel Ross, also known as Harriet Tubman of Dorchester County, Maryland, having self-emancipated to Massachusetts, did voluntarily offer her services to the Union Army. Encamped in enemy territory, attached to the 2nd South Carolina Volunteer Regiment of African descent. And whereas Harriet Tubman did work as a Union spy and did gather military intelligence for Major General David Hunter, Union commander of the Department of the South. And whereas Harriet Tubman did assist in planning a military special operation using her knowledge of the land and area informants, and did lead Union soldiers on a mission that destroyed millions of dollars in property, disrupted enemy supply lines, and emancipated more than 700 enslaved persons, gaining 100 of those men for the Union Army. And whereas Harriet Tubman nursed and cooked for the Union soldiers of the 2nd South Carolina Volunteer Regiment during her service, and nursed wounded Union soldiers of the 54th Massachusetts Infantry Regiment after their attack on Fort Wagner, South Carolina. And two more, whereas Harriet Tubman did subsequently transferred to the James River Hospitals and rise to the rank of matron at Fort Monroe's Collard Hospital before returning to care for her aging parents in Massachusetts. And whereas on Monday, November 11th, 2024, Harriet Tubman received a posthumous commission as a general officer in the Maryland National Guard. Now, therefore, he, Wes Moore, governor of the state of Maryland, do hereby proclaim November 24, 2024 as Harriet Tubman Appreciation Month in Maryland, and do commend this observation to all of our citizens. Signed by Governor Wes Moore, Lieutenant Governor Aruna Miller, and Secretary of State Susan Lee.
It is my pleasure to welcome Ms. Tina Wyatt to the podium for comments.
Well, good morning, everyone. Good morning. And this is a great, 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 great day. I have not prepared any remarks to speak into, but I would just go on and say what I always say about Aunt Harriet is I love her. I love her for her inspiration. I love her for her faith. I love her for her tenacity and her great ability to discern. And that is what helped her during the Civil War as well. We know that democracy means inclusion. Democracy means justice. Democracy means equality. And she came into the Civil War, into the bowels of slavery after having freed herself to be able to free others and to be able to fight for the Union to attain democracy for all, but mostly to free the enslaved that was there, and then to let them fight on an equal standing in order to help retain the Union. So now we find ourselves in a different climate, and there is no coincidence that she is blowing up like she is. God knew exactly what he was doing.
That was Tina Wyatt recording from this past Monday, Veterans Day, and we are very excited to have Tina a few minutes to have Tina Wyatt add to what she just said. As was mentioned, Tina Wyatt is the great-great-great-grandniece of Harriet Tubman. She's been on this program often. She's a close friend of mine and of Chuck's, and I must say I'm very proud to be friends with Tina, having listened and known about Harriet Tubman since I was a baby from my mom. So, Tina, maybe you could just jump in a few minutes and say, what is the message, or what message or instructions does your Aunt Harriet give us today as we face what many of us feel is quite a frightening moment in this country with the election of this new president? And welcome.
And Chuck, for having me on today. Just listening to the pieces of the ceremony and the speeches just overwhelms me with emotion all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about who she was and what she did. When I think about what she did and why she did it, she had a chance to go to a colonized area in Africa. But her words were, she said, no, she wasn't doing that. She said, because you brought me here, I'm staying here now. And that is the reason why she fought. She fought for what was only right for this country to go on and say they wanted to be great. You couldn't be great without when you're keeping people in bondage and oppressed. So that is something that we still have happening today. We have slavery under another name, and that's in our prisons. You know, we have people in bondage being oppressed by the things that they're denied. And you talked about health, the right to have health so that it's not a disparity between our health and another culture's health. So, and there are so many more, but what I would say is that she continued until she died. Even on her deathbed, she continued to fight for what she thought democracy was for this country. And I think what she would say right now is some of what I said before, and which helped her to really succeed to the level that she did. And that is to look to God, trust and rely on him to show you what to do, what to say, and how to move in this environment and during this journey that we are about to go on. You know, let him use the natural abilities that he has already given us and use them according to his purposes. Because we're in for, like I said, a journey, and we have to know how to navigate that. And she has such success in navigating all of her journeys because she looked to God, she connected to him, she listened for what he had to say and what to do and what not to do. So that's what I think that she would say, because she gave all the glory for her success to God.
And thank you very much, Tina. And I think part of that message is also to organize with other people, as she did. She did not work alone, but she worked together with many other people. And that's what we need to continue to do. And Chuck, do you have a final comment? We're just about out of time. But let me just go on to thank the people who helped with this program. I want to thank Magic Mike, our wonderful engineer, who we couldn't do things as well as we were trying to do without Mike. I want to also thank Crystal, who really helped with this show to edit the segments that we played. And last but not least, I want to thank the ancestors, our own ancestors. I want to thank my ancestors in particular, my mother and my father. I want to thank the ancestors of WPFW, including Gaston Neal, who we're going to hear from in a moment, sing his song To the North Star with Fred Foss. I want to thank Nap Turner, who always read that poem by Langston Hughes. I want to thank A.C. Bird, who made sure we would remember Paul Robeson and Damo Smith. And to thank all of you listeners for continuing to support the station. We have a big challenge in front of us to keep WPFW radio and public radio in general alive. But we're going to keep hope alive, and we're going to continue to organize. And Chuck, do you have a final word?
Yeah, I just want us to keep the faith and don't give up. Stay in the struggle, and we'll survive.
Yes, absolutely. And again, I want to remind people, you can listen to Dr. Greg Carr will be speaking this Wednesday at Howard University at the 45th Annual Charles Thompson Lecture at the School of Education, the Minor Building. It's probably going to be packed, but you can go online, Howard University, and sign up to attend virtually or in person. We're going to go out right now with a very special song with Gaston Neal and Fred Foss, To the North Star. We're going to hear a couple of moments of it, but I think it's very appropriate, not only for the Harriet Tubman being declared a Brigadier General and for West Governor Wes Moore to declare November 2024 as Harriet Tubman Appreciation Month, but also for the lessons that Harriet Tubman continues to give us as we move forward into this new struggle. So here we go with To the North Star.
Take the hands of the people. Move it with the North Star. Let my people go. Past the chains, past the fields of blood, past the houses of mangled souls, past the broken back children. Past the history of twisted cathedrals, praying to insidious gods for more lives. More darkness, more arms and body parts to run the foul-smelling ship of laws, constitution, and rights. To the North Star! To the North Star! To the North Star! To the North Star! Star, for all that is good, for all that is free, to the North Star, to the North Star.